A recently restored painting by a Renaissance master is now on display at the Cincinnati Art Museum. What does it take to restore a work of art painted centuries ago? This is Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. Joining me now to talk about that and a new material for reinforcing aging canvases developed at the University of Akron are Cincinnati Art Museum head conservator, Julie Ribbets. Thanks for being here, Julie.
Thank you.
Cincinnati Art Museum curator of European paintings, sculpture, and drawings, Peter Bell. Welcome back, Peter.
Great to be back.
And University of Akron professor of polymer science, Ali Dinojawala. Thank you so much for being here, Ali.
Thank you.
Peter, tell us about this artist and his importance in Renaissance art.
Jacopo Tintoretto. So I think if you think of sort of the three great Renaissance Venetian painters, you think of Titian, you think of Paolo Veronese, and you think of Jacopo Tintoretto. He was the most prolific painter in 16th century Venice. Took the mantle of painting from Titian, who he studied with probably, and ended up working for all of the great civic organizations, the religious organizations, the leaders of Venice in the second half of the century.
And Julie, these paintings are hundreds of years old. How complicated is it to restore them? How do you even figure out what materials were used to create them in the first place?
Absolutely. I mean, it becomes a bit of a can of worms sometimes. I mean, you look at basically starting from the substrate, in this case, the canvas. Canvases from this time period were made from organic material. You're thinking things like linens and such. And so, like our clothing, they will break down over time. And so what we really need to think about is not only the aesthetics of how paintings degrade over time, but the structure of the paintings as well. So for instance, a painting of, you know, this time period, you're looking at linens that are just breaking down naturally over time, the way that the original organic material would have broken down. So you're thinking of this not only from an aesthetic point of view, but also a structural point of view as well.
Well, Julie, my understanding is there were other efforts to restore these paintings in the past. Tell us about those. Do those sometimes do more harm than good?
Sometimes. It's kind of funny. Like, I usually tend to tell people that a solid percentage of my job is redoing work that other conservators have already done. And especially when you think from a historic standpoint, I mean, before conservation as a field had kind of taken that, you know, hard left into the sciences, what were most conservators? They were painters. They were sculptors. They knew the certain skill set that they had, and they took that skill set to do the best that they could with the materials they were given at the time. Much like doctors, we do have a sort of ethos of we know better so we can do better. And the science is constantly changing. Even what I learned when I was in graduate school a little over a decade ago now, some of it is obsolete. And so, again, like the medical field, we are constantly developing new materials. We're enhancing materials that are already in the field and well-known, and we're discarding materials from our toolkits that we now know might not have been the best choice for said work.
And is do no harm a driving force
for you?
It
very much is. Yeah. And I think it's very much a situation, too. I had a professor who once basically explained it as, anytime you're interacting with a work in a way that we do, there is always a chance that there might be a little bit of harm. Because what we do, we like to talk about reversibility in our treatments, but at the end of the day, on a molecular level, sometimes that's not possible, especially when you're doing things like consolidating flaking paint. So we kind of tend to err on the side of retreatability now. So what am I doing and how easy is what I'm going to do to this painting going to be retreatable for a future conservator?
Mm. Peter, how did the Cincinnati Art Museum become part of this work? I mean, this is a really important painter with really important paintings.
Yes. So we partnered with the Foundation for Italian Art and Culture. It's a nonprofit based in New York that we've worked with before on exhibition and conservation projects, and with the Galleria dell'Accademia di Venezia, the state paintings gallery in Venice, where these paintings live and have lived for hundreds of years. FIAC, the foundation, had worked with the gallery to identify these paintings as really important works that needed some help. And so we came in and helped underwrite the conservation treatment along with the Foundation for Italian Art and Culture of these works under the supervision of the Galleria dell'Accademia in Venice. So the paintings were conserved over the course of about a year and studied extensively. They have an amazing scientific facility in Venice. So they were the paintings were imaged, they were studied, they were cleaned and conserved in Venice. And then they got to be debuted here in Cincinnati, which has been really, really exciting.
Yeah, that is exciting. Now, Ali, Julie was just talking about canvases. This is where you come in. I know that part of the restoration process can involve reinforcing these canvases that are centuries old, made of these materials that degrade. Ali, tell us how polymers factor into that.
Sure. I think what Julie talked about is some of these paintings are quite old and in conditions that are not really good. And if you have to put it back on the canvases, we have to use a glue, an adhesive that would hopefully not harm the painting in the process of relining this into a new canvas. And that's a little tricky process because sometimes these materials that were used in the past could be wax, could be animal glue and stuff like that. And so that's a challenging task. Yes, you have to stick onto the new canvas, but it also has to not harm the old painting. It shouldn't penetrate to the canvas. So it was quite a challenging project that we got involved in about 4 years ago to design a new adhesives to reline canvas. So that's how we got involved in the process. And polymers are everywhere, not only just in the glue, but it's also part of the paint process, and conserving some of these things require knowledge of plastics and polymers. Mm.
We're talking about the conservation of art, what it takes to restore paintings that are centuries old and this new material that can help. Do you have questions or comments? Give us a call at 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. Julie, Ali was just talking about other materials that have been used in the past, wax, animal glue. What kinds of problems have those caused, or have they caused problems?
You get into kind of a variety of different problems depending on what your choice is, for instance, for adhesive. So in the context of what we're talking about right now, the adhesive that has been used is specifically for a process that we refer to as lining. So literally gluing another piece of canvas to the back of the original in order to sort of shore up the structural stability of the work.
Patching your jeans.
Exactly. Yeah. And sort of like, again, reinforcing these materials that we know are going to break over time or break down over time, because we know, given, you know, 400, 500 years, exactly naturally how these materials will change. And so when you use different materials, aside from the newly sort of reinvigorated Biva that we're talking about here through these partnerships with the University of Akron, another option might have been wax, for instance. And wax is great for a lot of reasons. It has a lower melting point such that you can gently heat the work up to a point where you are melting the wax but not the original paint or the varnish layers. But unfortunately, wax is very penetrative when it is in liquid form. And what that does for a lot of different issues, the main one being that it darkens canvas. So for instance, if you have a work by an artist that has raw canvas or a very thin priming layer that would have been put on that is still visible as part of the overall composition, all of a sudden you're introducing a liquid wax and the entirety of those areas is darkening. And that might change the entire tone of the work. So if you have an artist, for instance, first one that comes to mind for me is Morris Lewis. Most of Morris Lewis's works have raw canvas as a part of the composition. If we were to wax line a Morris Lewis work, you would immediately tell because the entire tone of the work would have changed. Mm-hmm. And that's something that we try to step away from when it comes to modern conservation treatments, because we want the artist's intent to be the first thing you notice when you are looking at a work of art, not what has been done to ensure the work is still here.
Mm-hmm. And Julie, didn't in Italy they use flour? And
yes.
Pasta lining?
Yes, we lovingly refer to it as a pasta lining because there is a flour component and then there's also generally a glue component. So, you know, if you're getting half of the ingredients to make pasta. It becomes a nice sort of fun moniker when we're talking about those types of linings.
Yeah. Can that damage a work of art when you're using the pasta lining?
The one thing that I have seen is sometimes when you introduce really yummy ingredients, they do bring about pests. Oh. So it's something that's always, you always want to be aware of in those materials that you're using. But I will say pasta linings, especially for a lot of Italian works, they were very successful and they're still completed today.
Mm. Well, Ali, Julie just mentioned this Beva product, I guess, or polymer. Yep. that a lot of our listeners might not be familiar with. Tell us about Beva and what the University of Akron did to kind of redevelop this Beva, what it is and why it needed to be redeveloped.
Sure, Lucy. I think the Beva stands for a formulation that was developed by Gustav Berger in 1970s. So that's where the B comes from. The EVA is the ethylene vinyl acetate. That's a polymer that was used during the original formulation when Gustav Berger was working on it. That was quite revolutionary at that time. As you heard, wax can penetrate to the canvas. It could change the tone of the painting. And so the idea there was to have it tacky enough so that it is sticky and it holds on to the painting, but it also doesn't penetrate to the canvas. So that was a really amazing product at that time in the 1970s, and a very successful use of plastics and polymer technology during that time. However, in 2005, what happened was that one of the main ingredients, which is the tackifier that is used in the Beva formulation, was discontinued by the manufacturers. We don't know specific reasons, could be environmental concerns was one potential guess from our part. But what that did was it changed the whole formulation at that time because the substitute that was used did not really give the same kind of the feeling of what the original formulation was. It was getting set at a higher temperature, enough change in that temperature to affect the paintings and the way the artists were actually using some of these materials, conservators were using that material. And so what Getty Foundation did was in somewhere in 2019, 2020, they decided to really focus the funding of conserving canvas initiative to really start thinking about reformulating this Beva 371, which is what the old formulation was called. And so that's where Akron came in. We kind of looked at the situation in terms of what is available in the market. We are very familiar with the adhesive industries around here. And that led us to the effort of reformulating Beva 371, which essentially we launched this new version in May. And now it's available to the art conservators to use this new formulation, which we are calling Beva 371 Akron.
Well, and Ali, I mean, this is a big deal. It's something that it sounds like conservators will use all around the world. How did this become a project of the University of Akron? Are you all just the best?
No, we have a good reputation in polymers from centuries now. But it's interesting how we got contacted. Chris McKenzie was one of the lead director on this project. He reached out to us saying Akron is a place where adhesives was very well known. We kind of have worked in this domain for quite some time and really great opportunity to kind of use our resources and talent here at Akron to come up with a solution. It was not easy because we had a very short time. We had to find a material which would be commercially available. Mm. It's really the process of applying this glue is in many different forms. Some folks brush, apply the glue with a brush, some spray it. And so there are many different versions in how it's used. So we had to make sure that it works in all these conditions. And so we had a very good, talented postdoc who was here at the time. And he focused his attention for the last 3 years in helping this project push his way through finding the material, testing some of these ideas, and actually getting the museums to really collaborate with us and try this glue out. And that was a really important step because otherwise we would not really know how to go about doing these things. And this collaboration was really a success in putting this thing together.
Well, we will continue this conversation after a short break, and later in the program, we'll hear about a book that lets you touch the stars. This is Cincinnati Edition. You're listening to Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. We're continuing our conversation about art, art conservation, how conservators determine what materials were used in artworks creation, and the environmental considerations that go into the restoration of art. My guests are Cincinnati Art Museum head conservator Julie Ribbetts, the museum's curator of European paintings, sculpture, and drawings, Peter Bell, and University of Akron professor of polymer science, Ali Dinojwala. You can join the conversation by calling 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. Peter, I want to get back to these paintings that are on display at the Cincinnati Art Museum. Tell us the stories that they depict.
Sure. There are three paintings from a series that Jacopo Tintoretto painted for a religious confraternity in Venice in the early 1550s, and they depict scenes from the Book of Creation, the Book of Genesis. So they're creation scenes. There's the creation of the animals, and then there are stories of the prefigures of Christ. There's Cain and Abel, and Adam and Eve. And they're large canvases with really beautiful complementary compositions that would have worked in an amazing way in their original installation, sort of high on the walls of a meeting room of this confraternity in Venice.
Yeah. Julie, how different do they look now that this restoration work has been done as compared to how they looked before all that started?
I will say, so like not having seen the full before and after treatment photos, I can tell you that there's at least been a large tonal shift, because it sounds like a varnish removal was a part of the treatment of that, of those three paintings. And this is one thing that I am actually incredibly excited that the Cincinnati Art Museum was able to show as part of the didactics for the exhibition, is that there is one image on the wall of sort of a during treatment where you can literally see the tonal shift when we removed those resinous varnishes from the beginning. So around this time period, varnishes would have been used as a protective layer. And so over time, they will age and degrade. And for these particular types of varnishes, as they age, they turn more and more yellow and become more and more cloudy. So you're not getting any of those really delicate differences in tonal shifts, and you're not getting the sort of really real clarity that you would have seen otherwise. So removing these varnishes, especially if they are not original to the work, really gives us a better insight into what the artist would have originally intended when they were creating the work.
Ali, did working on this project for the years that you and your team worked on it at the University of Akron, did it give you a different understanding or appreciation of what it takes to conserve artwork like this?
Absolutely. I mean, I did really appreciate the kind of work that goes behind the scene and getting the painting ready for art restoration and the painstaking work that goes on. I really appreciated that. And thanks for all the collaboration that we had with the museum. It was a fantastic experience.
Yeah. Julie, is it possible to get these paintings back to exactly what they would have looked like in the 1550s when they were, you know, fresh out of the artist's studio, or do we even know exactly what they looked like then?
I think that's a super interesting question, specifically because it is a huge conversation that happens in our field all the time, particularly when it comes to how we view modern contemporary works versus what we refer to then as old masterworks like the Tintorettos. And for the Tintorettos, I mean, we're talking 1550s. Photography didn't exist. We have no actual documentation beyond other artists' representations of what these works would have looked like when they left the studio. So inherently, there is a little bit of an understanding that these works will look a certain age. There are crack patterns that are part of the natural aging process that we accept in a way that we might not for a contemporary work that has been documented throughout the process of its creation in the artist studio in the year 2025. It's a really interesting conversation that happens, and especially when you tie it into, you know, work's value. What happens when a work, you know, exhibits its first crack? What does that mean for the work? On the whole, from a conservation standpoint, we don't worry so much about the value when it comes to these sorts of works. We're more sort of concerned with getting it back to as close as we can in a safe manner, specifically so that the little amount of time that we spent directly interacting with the work is but a blip in its history, and it'll be available to everyone for years and generations to come.
Peter, how important is that from a curatorial perspective to try to get the work as close to the original as possible, or is that important from your perspective?
Yeah, it's really sort of the lodestar for us is we want to see what the artist saw. We want to experience the artwork, especially with historical works, in as close approximation to their original viewing as we can. And so, you know, while we don't know exactly what the painting looked like at the time, we can be confident that now when we look at the blues of the sky in the background of the Adam and Eve or the Cain and Abel, that these clear, cool tones is much closer to what Tintoretto would have seen when he was finishing that painting in the early 1550s than the tones of the painting a year ago when it was hanging in the museum.
Well, and am I remembering correctly? It's not even just the tones, it's some of the figures even. I mean,
that's
some
right.
of the fish in his, the creation of the animals almost disappeared under these dark layers, and now they really pop more. I mean,
yeah.
I'm not saying it in a fancy way, but—
No, it's going back to what Julie said earlier, you know, different generations of conservators had different standards, and you often find in a work like this that has these paintings that have had treatments in museums in the 19th century that some of the conservators were taking great liberties and maybe repainting a fish that they didn't like. And so in this recent treatment, the conservators uncovered some original passages of paint, including finding a fish in it, that we wouldn't have seen before, and some of the birds in the sky and the creation of the animals.
Yeah, it is kind of an angry-looking fish, so maybe maybe it upset somebody for one another. So how, based on all that, Peter, how do you think these restoration projects contribute to our understanding of the artist, in this case Tintoretto, but other artists, the importance of the art, their place in art history?
Well, not only can we see the paintings more as they were intended to be seen, but thanks to the advances in conservation science, we can study these paintings and learn how they were made. They were in the labs in Venice. They were photographed with infrared reflectography, they were x-rayed, and through those processes we can see, and we can essentially go back into the studio and see the process of the underdrawing, of building up the composition, of layering the paint, of the artist changing his mind in the middle of the process. There were we could see three different positions of Cain's business arm as he was doing his awful deed that Tintoretto went through as he was trying to get the most drama out of that composition. And thanks to conservation, we can study that and sort of reveal the process of the artist.
And Julie, for conservators, is that kind of layered look and the x-rays and all the other kinds of things that you do, is that an important, it's got to be an important step, early step, yeah.
Absolutely, yeah. Paramount. As part of any conservation treatment that comes across my bench, the first thing I do is document, and as many forms as I have time for. One really sort of helpful sort of process of documentation is infrared reflectography, which gives us a little bit of insight into, you know, underdrawings, how the work was planned. And then on top of that, UV-induced visible fluorescence. So essentially very similar technology to a black light. Mm. That'll give us a lot of information as to things like surface layers and prior restorations. A natural resin varnish under UV might look a milky green color, whereas a restoration that was old would come up dark because of the materials that were used to make it.
Yeah. Well, this has been fascinating. I've been talking with Cincinnati Art Museum head conservator, Julie Ribbets, the museum's curator of European paintings, sculpture, and drawings, Peter Bell, and University of Akron professor of polymer science, Ali Dijnawala. Thank you so much for your time today, all of you. It's been wonderful. And these wonderful paintings will be on exhibit at the Art Museum through the end of this month. Stay tuned. This is Cincinnati Edition.